This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, 7:47 right now. You're with Ibrahim, Julian and me, Melissa. Now we're taking a look at EPF's second quarter results that they announced on Friday. They posted a 26% drop in second quarter investment income. That means what was 11.4 billion ringgit a year ago is now 8.4 billion ringgit. This was due to 3.5 billion ringgit worth of impairments, non-cash impairments in its listed equity investments.
Yeah, so if you look at the details of the results, equity contributed to the biggest fall, almost halving of the income, whereas the other sectors like the government securities as well as loans and bonds, that held up income a little bit. Real estate also fell by one third, but real estate is actually very small. So the biggest income contributor, equities, fell by almost 45%.
Yeah, and of course, when you mentioned real estate, Julian, it's down by 33%, and all this total income is down by 26%. My question is, can they sustain the current levels of dividend rates? Because we're enjoying, you know, 6.4%, 6.7% in the past few years. I don't know whether they can actually continue with this, you know, very luscious rates, if I may say so. And I think, is there going to be an announcement by EPF trying to preempt the market that this might not be a sustainable rate to achieve for this year?
That's the first time I'm hearing of returns being described as luscious.
Luscious,
very
luscious
nice
rates.
I think it's a very, very long game. We are not just looking at 1 or 2 years of return, you know, because your investment time horizon for retirement is as good as 20, 30 years, right? But the problem is what the thinking of the public is. I think the public has come to expect EPF to pay good dividends. Over the course of the 5-6 years, they have been paying pretty good dividends. And now, would people have a kind of dependence on that kind of rate?
Yeah, I have to agree with you. It's a question of whether the public will accept this, right? You can explain yourself. You can say that, you know, the Brexit and the fact that, you know, the equity markets were challenging. But will the public accept that explanation? Should the public accept the explanation is the bigger question. Yes, I think it's a question of explaining that this is a long game, right? But, I mean, you know, people get very emotional about their retirement funds.
Yeah. And this is your retirement money. It's not just about retirement funds. I think we can extrapolate this to other investment institutions, including the Tabung Haji, including ASB, ASN, and so on.
Co-op.
Yeah, co-op. So we've been enjoying, you know, 8% from Tabung Haji minus Zakat. It's 5% base plus 3% bonus. That's Tabung Haji. For ASB, we've been earning about 7 point plus to 8 point plus interest rate. These are, I don't know whether these are sustainable in the end of the day.
Sorry Jules, just to interrupt you, I have a question to ask. All this was mainly due to equity investments, right?
Yes, equity investment. And I think EPF took the very conservative step of doing what they call impairment, which is to write off the value of the stocks that they're holding. Now, if you look at market performance this year compared to last year, you would find out that nothing much has changed. The FBM KLCI remains at the same level a year ago. And let's say the S&P 500 to reflect foreign stock holdings is also about this, at the same level. But what has changed is that both the values of certain stocks like RHB, for which EPF holds, I think, 42%, and Malaysian Building Society, which EPF holds 65%, the market values of those companies have fallen more than 10 billion, 10 billion ringgit. And EPF, being a major shareholder of those two stocks and a lot of other stocks as well, has written off 3 billion of their asset holdings, and that hits income at the bottom line. So this can be written back if those stocks recovered, but at this point in time, 3 billion is what they wrote off.
Well, we're going to be speaking to EPF's Chief Investment Officer, Dato' Nasir Abdul Latif, about EPF's investment process for the Breakfast Grill today. It's coming up in about 15 minutes.
Yeah, and that very question about whether this we have enough for our retirement is going to be asked. Because if you look at EPF recommendation for basic savings, at 55, you must have about 200,000, at least 200,000 in your account. Only 38% of EPF members fulfill that requirement. And 200,000 is not even enough to last an entire retirement life, right? So there are bigger issues at play here, which are beyond EPF's control. It involves incomes, right? What the government is doing for us to increase our incomes. And that is the other link that is very important as well.
And I think it's timely because we are anticipating the budget announcement coming in less than a month away. And how does this play with the fiscal policy that the government has?
Okay, more on The Breakfast Grill with EPF's, the man in charge of EPF's investment, Datuk Nasir Abdul Latif. So stay tuned for that. But quickly, there's a follow-up on a story we were covering on Friday. Now, remember, the biggest story last week was the discussion about now property developers being allowed to lend for housing loans.
Becoming our long.
12
to 18%.
That's right. So the National House Buyers Association says that they view this with grave concern and they're worried about the repercussions of this.
Yeah, they are afraid that consumers will be dragged into deeper debts unwittingly. And I think those are the words that came out of Starbiz. Could be HBA's words as well. And I agree. I think that this is not, as we said last week, this is not a case of buyers beware. This is about policy avoiding calamitous situations for home buyers.
It's 3 to 4 times more expensive than banks. It can put home buyers into a negative equity, i.e. the wealth is destroying the value of the assets. It can raise default risk. And the effective interest rates for conventional home loan, guys, remember, it ranges between 4.5, 4.6% and 5%. So when you put something at 12% for non-collateral and 18% for collateral, or is it the other way around?
The other way around.
Yeah, it is huge, right? It is extremely huge, and it puts everything, not just the homeowners association and all that in risk, but the financial system outright.
This negative equity concept is quite interesting. It's when you're sort of making a paper loss on the property that you buy. And what it does is that over the long term, property returns are around the level of, let's say, 4 to 5% per annum. And you're not getting rental for it, because I think a lot of these people who take up these very expensive loans would live in their own homes. They're kind of desperate. They go and live in there, but they are losing money every year paying this 12 to 18% interest. And then at the end of the day, they would be asking the question of why should they even be doing this, right?
Well, you know, we've spoken to Siva Shankar of the Axis REIT, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yes.
And also Lynette Lee, the CEO of the Financial Planning Association of Malaysia. They both have grave concerns about this as well. Has anyone actually come out in support of this proposal?
Not
this
yet,
plan?
I think. No, perhaps the developers.
The developers, I would
say. We haven't
see.
Heard from them,
We
though.
Haven't, yeah, yeah. But all in all, I've just heard, you know, comments that Bank Negara, please look into this. Were you consulted? And
however, Johor Reda has come out in Starbiz and saying that they want to target more markets besides Singapore. They want to sell to the apart from the Singaporeans, they want to sell to everybody else. And I think that this is reflective of the DNA of developers. You want to go where you make most money. So this agenda of providing for the B40 or the M40 remains unsolved because you have very conflicting objectives.
Yeah, and you know, Johor Reda, they say that they want to target mostly local buyers. So that basically signals that they are going after anyone who has any kind of money, despite the economic concerns of the country.
7:56 right now, and the Edge Financial Daily has an exclusive on PNB. Sources have told them that PNB is facing a setback in the ongoing construction of what would be the tallest building in Southeast Asia, KL118. Now, three sources spoke to the Edge separately and said that there were problems with the foundation works, which required rectification works. It's not clear what the problems is specifically or how long the remedial process will take. Will this delay the completion of KL188? 118.
Yeah, so this is really very concerning as well. I mean, this is supposed to be the largest raft concrete pours, according to this exclusive from the Edge Financial Daily. The world's largest concrete pours, consisting of over 18,000 cubic meters of concrete placed continuously over 48 hours. So the question is, this is again about public safety. And whose head will roll? The main contractor, Samsung C&T Corporation, as well as UEM Construction, they JV'd to do this project. Also, Pintaras Jaya are the guys to do that foundational works. As of the latest check, this project is still within their order book.
But it's also similar to the Samsung story that we discussed a little bit earlier. In the rush to get to market, are you sacrificing safety?
Yeah. And the thing about Samsung is that you can recall, right? It's a consumer product. With 118 or KL 118 project. I don't know whether you can recall the whole building.
Well, the worst case scenario could be so much worse.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so in a written statement by PNB, they say that they are progressing within budget, on schedule and on track for completion by 2020. However, the construction companies that you mentioned, Julian, just now, they have declined to comment and they have referred queries to PNB Merdeka Ventures, the company that is handling this vehicle. And I think a lot of clarification needs to be given about the public safety of this building, because it does affect not just the building's safety, but also the surrounding areas as well.
Yeah, I think we had the same kind of arguments and discussion during KLIA 2 as well. A lot of to and fro blaming. And till today, I don't think we've seen any conclusion from it.
Well, we'll have to keep an eye out for that one. Very quickly, let's take a look at Amazon.com's founder, Jeff Bezos. He has unveiled ambitions for space exploration beyond providing a ride to tourists. He's now announced that Blue Origin plans to build a more powerful rocket capable of launching commercial satellites and flying people deeper into space.
There you go. Approval from the shareholders, I guess. Amazon, this is probably not under Amazon. This is probably under Jeff Bezos himself, who's one of the richest people in the world. So I guess breaking new frontiers.
Well, I mean,
very Star Trek.
This feels like it was just kind of a, you know, rich people's hobby, right? Space, yeah. You know, space tourism was the idea for super millionaires to go to space. But now he's saying that, well, there could be a commercial consideration. You could launch satellites.
Like Tesla 3, they are pushing the prices down for the regular, you know, the M40, if I would call it, right? And I think this would be one of those, right, where a global satellite might be there.
Just adding to the theme of public safety, we recently had that crash from SpaceX as well, which is a venture under Elon Musk, right? They tried to launch and it didn't go up and away. It just came down.
Okay, we've got the breakfast grill after the 8 o'clock news. Julian, you're going to be speaking to Datuk Muhammad Nasir Abdul Latif, Chief Investment Officer of EPF. Stay tuned for that, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.